Welcome to Open Your Eyes, a podcast about empowering each of us with the perspective and tools to grow and change. I hope you're having a great day. You know, our mission here at Open Your Eyes is to help us all open our eyes a bit more to the possibilities and realities all around us. And each week, we try to bring messages here to this podcast that will help you in real and practical ways to live a happier life. So today, wherever you are as you listen to this podcast, I hope you get a new perspective of how you can think and live better. Let's get started. Today, I'd like to talk about what happens when you adopt the mindset of because I choose to. In professional tennis, the percentage of very talented junior tennis players globally who actually reach the top 100 in professional rankings is exceptionally low. The statistics are well below 1 in 100 of very good junior tennis players will ever make it as a pro. Well, in the French Open, for example, there are 128 players entered into the tournament. 104 of them are direct entries, meaning they have a WTA ranking that gets them into the tournament automatically. There are 16 qualifiers who play 3 rounds of qualifying tennis to earn a spot, and there are 8 wildcard entries who were selected by the French Tennis Federation, usually young prospects or returning stars who have been injured. In 2019, Australian Ashley Barty beat Sofia Kenin, Madison Keys, Amanda Anisimova, and Marketa Bandrosova to win the French Open. That's quite an accomplishment given her young age. But what was more amazing than her win was the path of choice she took to get there. Ashley was a highly talented junior player from Queensland, Australia. She won the junior Wimbledon title in 2011 at age 15 and quickly became one of the most closely watched young prospects in women's tennis. As a teenager on the professional tour, she was traveling constantly, competing against adults and living a highly structured life that left very little space for normal adolescence. Like many young elite athletes, she experienced the hidden cost of early success, not just physical fatigue, but emotional and psychological strain from constant competition and expectation. Caroline Wozniacki said, "The tour is very demanding. You're always traveling, always competing, and it can wear you down mentally and physically. You're traveling alone or with a few people. You stay in hotels endlessly, and you're disconnected from home." For Ashley, even though she was clearly talented enough to build a long career, she felt like it was being forced out of her, and she didn't feel like it was her choice to live this way. So at just 18 years of age, Barty made a surprising decision. She walked away from professional tennis. This was not due to injury or lack of opportunity. It was a choice. And she later explained that she needed distance from the sport and the environment surrounding it. The constant travel and pressure and identity as a tennis player had become something she no longer wanted to live inside at that time. So instead of continuing out of obligation, she chose something very different. She stepped into professional cricket in Australia. During her time away from tennis, she played at the Women's Big Bash League for the Brisbane Heat. She wasn't a casual participant. She trained seriously and competed at a professional level in a different sport. However, after roughly 2 years away, Barty made another major decision. This time she chose to return to tennis. But the difference was why she returned. She was returning because she chose it. She knew the life of a tennis pro. She had missed it. She saw the benefits of it, and it was her choice. And that distinction is critical. Her return was not driven by pressure or necessity, but by commitment. And with that mindset, she started to succeed. She steadily climbed in the rankings. Her game became more complete and adaptable, combining variety and intelligence and calm decision-making. She eventually reached world number one in singles and won 3 Grand Slam titles, including the French Open in 2019, Wimbledon in 21, and the Australian Open in 22. At the peak of success, her framing of the sport remained consistent. It was still something that she chose to engage in. She wasn't forced. This is incredibly important. The choice to return, the choice to recommit, gave her mental and emotional wherewithal to win. Now, you may be in business or leading a team or pursuing a profession, and some days it can feel like you don't really have a choice. You have to. But the truth is, most of us do have a choice. And when we remember that we can choose and do choose, our approach is different. It's more healthy. For Ashley in 2022, at just 25 years of age, still ranked number one, she made another unexpected decision. She chose to retire from professional tennis. Now, the decision surprised the sports world because she was at the absolute top of her career. But in her retirement announcement, she explained that she felt complete and ready for the next chapter in her life. She didn't need to endure a tennis career. She entered and exited by choice. Now, I think there's something incredibly healthy about Ashley's story. In my current role, I will catch myself saying from time to time, I hate that I have to do this. And the truth is, I don't have to do it. I chose to do it. And yes, with any choice comes obstacles and things we don't necessarily want to do or things that may be unpleasant. But on those days, I remember, I have a choice. I chose this. I get to do this. This is a privilege. And for most of us who are complaining about our circumstances, there are thousands of people in this world who would give anything to have our circumstances. And you may be building a business. And there is a huge difference when you remind yourself that you chose to do what you're doing and you're lucky to be doing it versus I have to or I must. At the center of human experience is a simple but often overlooked truth. When facing anything in life, there is always a choice. And this doesn't mean we choose the circumstances themselves, nor does it imply that hardship is optional or avoidable. Rather, it means that within any circumstance, no matter how constrained, unfair, or painful, there remains a space of agency, the ability to choose how we relate to what is happening. In our circumstances, we can choose how we will engage with those circumstances. Years ago, I read the book, The Redemption at Hacksaw Ridge. And you may have read the book as well, or at least seen the movie. In 1929, Desmond Doss nearly kills his brother while they were roughhousing. That event and his Seventh-day Adventist upbringing reinforce his belief not to kill or carry a gun. Well, after the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, he enlists in the United States Army to serve as a combat medic. He's placed in basic training under Sergeant Howell. Desmond excels physically, but becomes a pariah among his fellow soldiers for refusing to handle a rifle or to train on his Sabbath. His superior officers attempt to have him kicked out of the Army, but that is not successful, so they subsequently try to drive him out with grueling labor tasks. They allow other soldiers to beat him, and he is denied leave, even to marry his fiance. Finally, they try to court-martial him, but the charges are dropped, and he eventually marries his fiance. Well, in battle, Desmond bravely saves the lives of his fellow soldiers. Captain Glover apologizes for dismissing Desmond's beliefs and states that the squad is scheduled to retake the ridge, Hacksaw Ridge, on Saturday, but they won't launch the next attack without him. He agrees, but the operation is delayed until after he concludes his Sabbath prayers. The film closes with images of the real Desmond Doss being awarded the Medal of Honor by President Truman for rescuing 75 soldiers at Hacksaw Ridge. Well, like Desmond, we may not choose our circumstances, but we always have a choice in how we respond to what we can't control. External events may be fixed in the moment, an illness, failure, loss, setback, but interpretation and the response to them is not fixed. The human mind has the ability to assign meaning to experience, and that meaning directly influences our behavior and long-term outcomes. Two individuals can encounter the same difficulty and experience entirely different psychological realities depending on how they frame it. One may only see obstruction, while the other may see a condition that demands adaptation. The circumstance itself doesn't determine the meaning but the response does. This principle does not deny pain or difficulty. Instead, it recognizes that suffering is not only caused by what happens, but also by what we do with it. The moment a person recognizes that response is still a choice, even in limited form, a shift occurs from helplessness to agency. Here's the point. Choice is a powerful liberator for you and me. Choice to respond, choice to act, to think, to frame our life and actions is incredibly powerful. As Goethe wrote, it is my personal approach that creates the climate. It's my daily mood that makes the weather. I possess tremendous power to make life miserable or joyous. You know, when I was in high school, I went to a lecture on a Sunday night, and the lecturer was the mother of a girlfriend. Her mother taught this principle: you always have a choice. Every time you face anything in life, you have a choice. And she said, if it isn't life-altering important, you have a choice to let it go and not to react. Just say, this isn't life-altering. It isn't worth reacting to. Just find the choice in it. Well, the next day I went to work. At the time, I drove a truck and delivered 50-pound bags of flour to restaurants, bakeries, and other places. And when I got to work, the truck had been loaded the night before, and it was loaded backwards. You see, I had a specified route, and the truck was loaded so I could take the flour off in order of the restaurant locations. Usually, this would upset me, but I remembered the lesson from the night before. I get to choose how I will react. And this wasn't life-altering, so I let it go. I said to myself, wow, now I get to drive the route backwards, something I've never done before. Could be interesting, and off I went. Well, unfortunately, the state prison was my first stop. Now, when you make a delivery to the prison, your truck is searched as you come in and as you leave. The search was no problem on my way in. It went smoothly. I drove to the dock and the inmates helped me unload. As I left and arrived at the gate to exit the prison, the guards came out to search my truck. Now, usually, for the prison was loaded on last, so when I left the prison, the truck was empty. And that made the search much easier. But on this day, I had a 3/4 full truck of flour still to deliver. And this meant the guards had to climb in and search between all the flour bags. They were livid. They called me every name in the book, insulted my mother and me and my posterity. They made me wait 30 minutes before they opened the gates just to rub it in. I sat there at the gate waiting while they refused to open the gate. As I sat there, I thought, well, how do I follow my friend's mother's advice? But I did. It wasn't life-altering, so I remembered I had a choice in how I would react. And I asked myself, what was I learning? Well, I learned that doing things right the first time is important. I learned that I never wanted to be employed as a prison guard. And while I was being held hostage by the prison guards, I got a 30-minute nap. So as I chose the positive, my list of things I appreciated started to grow. And when I left, I genuinely apologized to the prison guards. I told them, hey, I'm sorry. The truck was loaded wrong, and I appreciate you guys. Again, I'm really sorry. And when I said this, you should have seen their faces. One of them started to smile, laughed a little, and told me to get the blankety blank out of there. You and me, all of us, we always have a choice. Choice allows us to embrace our current circumstances rather than resist them. Embracing doesn't mean approval or agreement. It means acknowledging reality without denial or distortion. Resistance often consumes our energy without producing any movement or results. It creates a psychological split between what is and what should be. And I've experienced this, as you probably have as well. We spend so much time resisting, when in fact, if we were to embrace our place in our business or family and spend the energy on solutions, just think of how much better off we would be. Born Abraham Jakubowicz in Leipzig, Germany, in 1920, Jaku was the only Jewish student at his school. But that was not a problem, he said, until Adolf Hitler came to power. At the time, he was initially expelled from his school for being Jewish. Because of the dangers in Germany, his family sent him to a boarding school under a fake name. But when he arrived home in November of 1938, to surprise his parents for their wedding anniversary, nobody was there. It was the night of broken glass when Jewish homes, businesses, and synagogues were attacked throughout Germany and Austria. Many were killed, and tens of thousands of Jews were rounded up and sent to concentration camps. Jacques' family had already gone into hiding, and the 18-year-old was all alone. At 5 in the morning, 10 Nazi soldiers smashed down his door. They brutally beat him, punched him relentlessly, and made him watch as they destroyed his family's 200-year-old home. One of the soldiers started to engrave a swastika into his arm. Jacques would later say, "In front of my eyes, I lost my dignity, my freedom, and my faith in humanity. I lost everything I lived for. I was reduced from being a man to being nothing." He was taken to a concentration camp, but released 5 months later to work in a factory making tools. Instead, he fled to the border and was smuggled into Belgium. He was caught by Belgian police and once again locked up. Not for being Jewish this time, but as a German refugee. 7 months later, France deported Jews, and Jacques found himself on a train bound for Auschwitz. He described how, before boarding, he stole a hammer, screwdriver, and a spanner from the train platform. He went to the train driver and asked him in French how long it would be until the train entered Germany. The driver said it would be 9 hours. He thought to himself, "I have 9 hours to get out." He took nearly all that time to unscrew and chip away at the floorboards of the train carriage, but he was eventually able to do it. When the train was just a few kilometers from Germany, he and 8 other passengers wiggled underneath the carriage and escaped back to Belgium, where he secretly lived with his parents and sister in an attic. However, one day, they went back to the family's old apartment in Brussels, and the Gestapo were waiting for them. The women were arrested and put on a train to Auschwitz, but they didn't survive the trip. He was never able to find out where they were buried or their ashes were scattered. He was arrested and sent to Auschwitz, which he called my hell on earth. In 1945, as the Soviet forces got closer to Auschwitz, the camp was evacuated, and tens of thousands of prisoners were made to walk enormous distances day and night with no food. He survived the first march, and he was sent to work in a factory at a smaller camp. When that camp was evacuated, he found himself on another march. He described how he became seriously ill after drinking poisoned water from a stream, but managed to crawl to a highway where he was rescued by American soldiers. It was June of 1945 and the war was over. He, however, was malnourished and had cholera and typhoid. He would survive, and not long after the end of the war, he married his wife, Flora, in Belgium. They moved to Australia in 1950. "At that time, my heart was healed and my happiness returned in abundance," he explained. "I made the choice that from that day until the end of my life, I promised to be happy, smile, be polite, helpful, and kind. I also promised to never put my foot on German soil again. Today, I stand in front of you, a man who has kept all of those promises." Just a few years ago, he passed away at the age of 101. He wrote a book in which he describes himself as the happiest man on earth. "Here's what I learned," he said. "Happiness does not fall from the sky. It's in your hands. Happiness comes from a choice inside yourself and from the people you love. And if you are healthy and happy, then you'll be a millionaire. And happiness is the only thing in the world that doubles each time you share it. As for you, my new friend, I hope that your happiness doubles too." Now, I don't know about you, but this quote, written in the middle of his book, which I highly recommend to you, caught my attention and has stayed with me ever since. Happiness does not fall from the sky. It's in your hands. It comes from a choice inside you. When we choose to embrace our circumstances, this allows us to feel fully. And feeling is necessary for learning and adaptation. Emotional experience is often misunderstood as a barrier to effectiveness when, in fact, it is a source of information to help us become better. Kerry Egan, a hospice chaplain who spent years with people at the end of their life, in her conversation with these dying patients, observed a consistent difference in how people experienced meaning. Some resisted their circumstances emotionally, wishing things were different, and framing their lives through regret alone. Others made a better choice. They embraced their reality as it was, even if it was painful, and allowed themselves to feel it without turning away. In that space of acceptance and choice, something changed. People began to speak differently about their lives, not as failures, but as experiences. Experiences that contain moments of love and connection and learning. When people chose to stay present with their circumstances, even late in life, meaning started to emerge. Now, I think this is true. As imperfect as we all are, we have a choice as to the meaning we make from the experiences we are having. And we can make an entirely different meaning if we choose to do so. I think in your job and work, you can choose to be a professional. And that repeated choice builds competence over time. It also builds emotional capacity. The difference isn't the absence of fatigue or hardship or even challenge. It is the choice to say, I am a professional, and what I'm engaged in is teaching me something that will make me better over time. And this is what great business builders and parents and others who are successful learn. And here's the thing. Small choices accumulate into identity through repetition. The language of I choose to is not only relevant in moments of crisis, it's powerful in everyday decisions. You see, every time a person chooses how to respond to discomfort in their business, how to interpret a setback, or how to engage with circumstances, they are reinforcing a pattern that turns into their identity. I can be a person who does this. I am a professional who endures. Over time, these patterns become habitual and habits become character. And what begins as a conscious choice gradually becomes automatic and doesn't require choice. This means that the accumulation of choices determines whether a person experiences themselves as reactive or intentional throughout life. Arunima Sinha was an Indian volleyball player. One day while traveling to Delhi, robbers snatched her bag and pushed her out of the running train so they could take the contents of her bag. She fell on the tracks and was unable to move due to her injuries. A train coming from the opposite side ran over her leg below the knee. She lay there throughout the night with 49 trains passing by. Finally, locals took her to the hospital the following day. She was treated and spent months in recovery. As a result, she faced a complete disruption of identity, physical ability, and future expectations. The key moment was not the accident herself, but what she chose afterward, whether she would live in constant regret or opposition to her condition, or whether she would embrace her new reality and choose to move forward. She began training for mountaineering, eventually deciding to climb Mount Everest with a prosthetic leg. This choice was not about ignoring difficulty. It was about choosing to move forward and not letting circumstances create her identity. Climbing Everest required her to feel every limitation, pain, fatigue, fear, rather than bypass it. But she became India's first amputee to scale Mount Everest and then many other mountains. The shift from I have to I choose to is therefore not semantic. It's internal strength. It allows you and me to mentally take responsibility for where we are, where our business is, where our family is, and where we are going. To live from this perspective is to recognize that while circumstances may be given, our level of participation is chosen. And in that recognition lies a quiet but profound form of freedom. So, this week, take a look at your business or work or family, and instead of wondering why I have to, put on the new mindset of I choose to, and watch the energy and freedom and results that come your way as a result of that choice. Most of all, thanks for being here today. And don't forget to share this podcast with a friend and join us next week for another podcast as we learn to open our eyes to who and what we can become.